9:30 PM. Call to order for establish a quorum.
Connie Bruce present.
Stu Martinez present.
Don Greiner present.
And Dennis Scott present. Any, how about Linda Stevenson? Could you lead us in the pledge?
Sure. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Corey, I understand you have an added agenda?
One item, Mr. Mayor. It's a discussion on the location of advertising for city RFP and bid projects.
Okay, is the council in favor of adding that to the 22? Mr. Greiner?
Pardon?
Are you in favor of adding that to the next meeting?
I presume so. Okay. So I'm city manager requested.
Okay, consider it added then. We're going to have public comments, but if it regards the Wiki project, we're going to also have, you can state questions and answers after they do the presentation. So does anybody have any comments outside of that? No comments? Okay, then we'll move right along here. We have some ODOT representatives here. Do you want to come up and just state your position, your name, and we'll move along right here, please. And after they give the presentation, the council will ask them questions, anything the council has, and then we'll turn it over to the public. And when the public asks their questions, just be respectful, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. My name is Bob Bryant. I'm the region manager for the Central Oregon region of ODOT's Region 4. And with me?
I'm Della Mosier. I'm an interim area manager here in Central Oregon for ODOT Region 4.
And we have a number of staff here as well. So thank you for providing some time for us to provide a briefing for you on the WICHIUP project. And if you wouldn't mind, I would just proceed into that.
Oh, please do.
Make a move. Copy. We do have a short presentation this evening just to provide some background and where we are currently that we'd like to walk through. Certainly if there are questions that you have as we walk through it, we could manage that or certainly take questions and have some discussion dialogue.
We'll break down and let you go through and then we'll ask questions.
Okay. Yeah. It's fairly short. So. Again, the goal this morning or this evening would be for us to provide some background on the project, share with you sort of the current status, the current situation that we've experienced here over the past few months, and provide you an idea of what the recommendations moving forward might look like from here forward. So that's our goal here this evening as far as the presentation goes. With that, starting with the background, you all will recognize, of course, the purpose of the project, which was essentially to eliminate the last at-grade crossing of BNSF, the railroad, with US Highway 97, here in WICHIUP Junction. There's been concern for many years of the hazard that exists with that at-grade crossing, the skew of the railroad and Highway 97, and the fact that buses and hazardous material loads have to all stop at the crossing before proceeding, and having no way really realistically to provide them a refuge to stop means that they're having to stop in the travel lane for US 97. And certainly as traffic volumes have increased over time, that concern, that safety concern has increased as well. So today we just want to talk a little bit and share with you about where we've been. The project work started actually a little over 10 years ago, where we initiated some preliminary engineering to begin to look at what a solution could look like here in WICHIUP and to address the at-grade crossing of BNSF and US 97. And the project kicked off in earnest in 2009, where we began engineering work. This was before we even had any idea whether we would have construction funding, but we wanted to refine what that solution could look like. So we kicked off the project in 2009 and worked on a refinement of a design here locally with stakeholders and the community over the course of 2010 to 2015. Part of that was the design itself, but also we conducted our geotechnical engineering analysis during that period, the same type of engineering work and subsurface analysis that we would typically do for bridge projects. So that was done over that same period of time. While we were engaged in that design process, in about 2013, we went to the Oregon Transportation Commission and got support for a funding opportunity to move the project from a shelf-only design type project to construction and actually implement the project. And we had authorized for the project $17 million. That's including construction and, of course, all the engineering and right-of-way that was included for the project. So the Transportation Commission authorized the funding in 2013. We further refined the design and put together a set of contract documents that went out to bid in 2015, late 2015. And most of the work occurred under contract during the calendar year 2016. You all know that, having observed the work. And as part of that, just a little more detail on what got accomplished during that construction season, 2016 construction season. During March, or beginning in March, our contractor began to place embankment to increase the elevation of the what would become a new alignment for Highway 97 to get up and over the railroad tracks. The contractor constructed the mechanically stabilized earth walls and the abutments that the bridge would rest on during that period. And over the course of that summer and by September, most of the embankment that would ramp up the future Highway 97 up to either end of the bridge was built. So much of that work was done during the construction season in 2016. The contractor also had fabricated the concrete girders, the beams that would span the railroad tracks, and which the bridge deck would sit on ultimately. So those girders were placed in the fall, late summer fall of 2016. You'll remember, of course, the winter that we had between 2016 and 2017. It was not conducive for work on a project like this, and so essentially the contractor parked their equipment over the course of winter, and as did we, and basically sat on the project through winter, coming back to it this spring in 2017. And one of the first things that we did, of course, in the spring was our normal surveying work that would check where we left off last year or the previous year with where we're starting this year. And while we were doing that, the contractor initiated work to start forming the bridge deck itself on those girders that had been set the previous fall. And it was while we were doing that survey work to just check where we were at that we identified there was some increasing or unusual settlement that we would not have anticipated on a project like this. We would typically expect some level of settlement when you place that much embankment or even build a bridge foundation on native earth. We would expect and design into our project some level of settlement. But what we recognized with the survey work that we had gathered early spring of this year was an unusual amount of settlement, which raised a lot of red flags for us. We asked the contractor to again park their equipment until we could get a better handle on the situation with the increasing settlement that we were seeing. And so with that, we felt concerned enough to where we brought on some additional geotechnical engineers from first FHWA, Federal Highway, and Federal Highway Western Federal Lands, as well as hired a third-party geotechnical engineering consultant to help us understand what we were seeing with the survey data that we collected in the spring of this year. And with the increasing settlement that it seemed to be, that survey data seemed to be reflecting. And that work had occurred most of this past summer. We've been in the process of gathering the data. We drilled some additional drill holes to gather additional subsurface information. And with the help of our geotechnical engineers and consulting geotechnical firm, better ascertain what was going on underneath the project that was built here at Wickiup Junction. So with that, I think I'll ask Della to provide a little more detail on what those findings over the course of this summer resulted in. A good note. Okay.
Thank you, Bob. So as Bob said, we started to observe settlement, unusual settlement. Typically, we would expect a certain level over a period over the winter period, but what we saw was an increasing rate of settlement. So the settlement was speeding up between March and May, and that caused a red flag warning for us at ODOT. And so we assembled this team of geotechnical experts, as well as got our internal geotechnical staff together to talk about what we could do to stabilize the settlement situation. What came out of that conversation, which happened over a period of a couple of weeks, was a recommendation to unbuild the embankment, so to remove the soil embankment that was causing the loading that we thought might be adding to the issues that we were seeing as far as the increased settlement rates. We also, as Bob mentioned, installed 5 drill holes. And so those are noted here on the slide, the 5 dots, and hopefully you can see them. They have a lot of small text next to them, but there are 5 holes, 2 on either side of the bridge, and then 1 kind of out towards the top of the rear picture. We call that was our free case drill hole. Within those holes, they were drilled to almost 280 feet, and we installed various types of monitoring equipment to start to collect data to help us ascertain why we were seeing increased rates in settlement. We also installed equipment to monitor the structure to ensure that we weren't having any sort of safety issues related to the structure or the walls, and continued to monitor that data until our external geotechnical expert, Cornforth, could collect the data, take our laboratory samples, and start testing and provide us their recommendations. To give you an idea of what sort of substructure we were dealing with out there, when we logged these soil holes, we found that there's about a 50-foot thick layer of lightweight sandy silts that are associated with volcanic deposits that are capping what appears to be an ancient lake deposit. And of course, during the initial investigation, the ODOT geotechnical report identified this lake deposit. And because of that, the foundations were engineered to float on the upper 50 feet. And in fact, you will see that the bridge abutments are built into the walls on either side of the bridge. Whereas in a normal bridge abutment, we might have spread footings with shafts underneath them. You'll see that they were connected into the MSC walls to help float those foundations. In the upper 25 feet, there's about 175 feet there of lacustrine, which is just a geological word for lake deposits. And then at around 250 to 270 feet, we identified a gravel layer or an alluvial fan layer. So essentially, the geology in the area consists of an ancient lake that has been converted kind of more to a bog or a muck hole that's capped by about 50 feet of more lightweight silty sand material. What And the geologic investigation from ODOT had identified this 50-foot of silty sand capping in ancient lake deposit. However, what Cornforth found when they took our tests and conducted laboratory testing, they expected to find a peaty or organic or dead plant material type of mud, also composed of more of a swelling clay material. They did tests to prove their theory, and what they found was that there wasn't organic material and there wasn't swelling clays, and that's typical of what we would find in a deposit like this. And so they moved on to a special type of testing using X-ray diffraction and scanning electron microscopes. And what those additional, more advanced tests found was that there were diatoms comprising most of the muck, most of the what we would call the dirt in this bog. These diatoms can't be identified with the eye, and they're essentially dead algae. When dead algae that have been almost perfectly preserved in the condition that they were when they were alive. So they have not been crushed or deformed, they're basically buried alive until they died. So a little bit different than the diatom pits that we would see maybe up in the Terrebonne area, where those diatoms aren't actually still in a liquid environment, and they're definitely crushed. So these are intact. Cornforth was able to give us some ideas for how to move forward on the project, and their recommendations include different variations of lightweight fill and viaducts. And viaducts are just bridges over land. So the idea was, how can we make this grade separation even lighter than the one that we have right now? And you can build more viaduct and less lightweight fill, or you can build more lightweight fill and less viaduct, but that's essentially the type of recommendations that we have, and the cost to do that type of construction are quite high. We only have a couple, 3 months of data at this point, and so any mitigation options that we would select to move forward would require extensive supplemental and testing and analysis to help us assess the risk moving forward. And then finally, we are in very unusual geologic terrain. Cornforth found that there isn't hardly any other examples in the world of diatomaceous deposits found at the bottom of an ancient volcanic lake. And because of that, the risks are pretty high, because evaluating how those soils are going to perform over time are beyond normal soil mechanics. So they don't behave like those swelling clay peaty soils. They behave quite differently, and as they start to crush, they crush unpredictably and with increasing rate at times. And so with that, I will let Bob take it from here. Thanks.
Thanks, Stella.
Is there any way you can turn up the speakers a little bit?
Okay, thanks, Della. So just touching quickly on where we are currently. With the work that's been done and the settlement that's occurred, one thing that all of the geotechnical engineers have agreed on is that there's been enough deformation in the structure itself from the embankment that was placed on either side of that structure, that the girders, those beams that would have held the deck eventually, need to be removed. So under any scenario that we move forward with today, the conclusion has been that to eliminate or avoid any further damage, any potential damage to those beams, they need to be removed. So the first course of action that we should expect moving forward, even between now and the end of the calendar year, occurring this fall actually, would be the removal of the beams, those girders that were placed last year, about November. We've already looked for opportunities to utilize some of the materials that were prepared for this project on other projects, knowing that it could be a while before we're back to a place, again, under any scenario where those materials could be used here. And so while we've got other paving projects in the area, other types of work that are scheduled to occur in this area, we're looking at how some of that material, such as the crushed rock, could be utilized effectively for other projects. Recommendations moving forward. Again, we just got the final report from Cornforth, our consultant, here in the last couple of weeks, and so we've been processing the information from that report and working with them on what a set of recommendations and next steps could look like, in addition to removing the girders from the bridge. It looks like, again, from the very rare, the unique aspects of this subsurface condition that we've experienced here, that the proposed solutions moving forward come at a very high cost and don't resolve or effectively eliminate the risk of building this type of structure at this location. So with that, the recommendation that we have moving forward would be to further decommission the project, remove those existing improvements, the improvements that were built that we've already described for the project, and utilize the remaining, the balance of funds that were authorized by the Transportation Commission for this project to further investigate the site conditions. Again, it's been a fairly quick turnaround that we ask our geoengineering consultant to provide the information to date. Typically, this type of analysis would require much more data and a longer time to evaluate, particularly given the unique nature of the subsurface condition that we've experienced here, than what we've had over the course of this summer. So the recommendation to the commission could look like utilizing those remaining funds that were authorized for this project to further map out what this subsurface condition looks like here at Wickiup Junction, the size, the limits, the depth, and further analyze the properties of the material that that we've experienced here, and while at the same time further evaluate opportunities for salvaging or utilizing the materials that that we've already purchased, basically, or that already exist for the project. And as I say, do additional analysis on the diatomaceous soils and properties that that we've encountered here. And then with that information, scope what an alternative would be, both short-term as well as long-term, to get back to our original goal, which is to increase the safety, enhance the safety of the at-grade crossing of BNSF Railroad with US 97. We've looked at short-term solutions in the past, again, because of this very skewed nature of the crossing of the railroad and US 97, haven't come up with an effective way of providing sort of that short-term easy solution, but we would reevaluate whether there are things, signing, use of today's technology that could be utilized, particularly in the short term, to address our original goal, which was to enhance safety at the crossing. While then at the same time, with the commission's support, Transportation Commission's support, look at alternatives for going back to a longer-term solution, which I would expect to look much like this project, resulting in a grade separation, a bridge of US 97 at some location where we wouldn't have to experience the uncertainty of the subsurface conditions here to separate US 97 from BNSF. So with that, I'm going to pause and
We'll start with the council asking any questions that they might have of you. Are you ready for that?
Sure.
We'll start with the council.
Okay. So, based on your report, it took 10 years to get us to the point that we're at now.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if at that time, when we first started identifying options, were there other options available? I mean, I can reference the Vandenberg Road, and we've had that report done here, and that was, there were several different options available.
Yeah, at the time we started doing preliminary engineering for the project in 2007, we had explored whether or not additional lanes, refuge lanes, could be built at this location that would provide buses and hazardous loads of hazardous material opportunities to get out of the travel lane, to stop, meet their legal requirements to stop at the tracks, and then proceed, merge back into the travel lane and proceed. But again, because of the skewed alignment between the railroad and Highway 97, it was determined, at least then, that by the time you provided that dimension necessary for those vehicles to pull out of the travel lane, you'd be so far away from the railroad tracks, again because of the skewed nature of it, that it would not comply with the legal requirement of stopping at the tracks. It would be so far away. Not to say that we couldn't look at that again and see if by today's standards, and given where we are today, whether there's an option for that. The other types of things that we would explore short term, again, could be signing, use of technology that could enhance the safety, especially for those vehicles that have to stop prior to passing over the road tracks. I don't recall that we looked at any other alignments. This seemed to be the most effective realignment of Highway 97 to accomplish the goal. Anything moving away from this location to again reevaluate a longer term solution to bridge Highway 97 over the railroad tracks would likely require a longer realignment of 97, more roadway to be built, more impacts as a result of that than what this alternative required. And so we wouldn't have looked, we would have been looking for the most expedient and efficient way for getting US 97 up and over the railroad tracks, not of course anticipating the very unique subsurface conditions that we experienced here. And as Della mentioned, there's a lot that we don't know yet about those subsurface conditions. We know what we have right here, where we built the project. The weight of the project triggered this accelerated settlement that was unanticipated. We know what's occurring and now have at least a better understanding of what's occurring right at the project location. But the extent of that condition, underground condition, the size of it, the depth of it, those kinds of details, we haven't yet taken time to try and gather with our geotechnical engineering consultants. So we'd have to explore and we'd want to collect more information to better understand just how big a deal this is, how big of a underground lake this was back in the day, and what that would look like as far as a new alignment if we got back to trying to realign Highway 97 over the railroad tracks. Hopefully that answered your question. I apologize for the length of it.
I have a couple of them. What was the total percentage of completion on the project?
Go ahead, Dylan.
Yeah. We were about 80% complete. At the time that the increase in settlement rate was observed, we had tied the steel and were about to pour the deck, and we stopped that work prior to pouring the deck. So we'd built the embankments, we hadn't quite rocked and put the aggregate on top of the embankments and paved, but we were quite close.
One last thing, I'm curious how this is going to change ODOT geotechnical engineering pre-project in the future.
We've already started talking about that. In fact, the director Matt Garrett, has already put an action into into motion to take a look at our geotechnical engineering practices. Certainly, I just want to emphasize that the work that we did here met the standard of practice for these types of projects, generally. I mean, there was no way that we would have anticipated this type of subsurface condition here in Central Oregon, and for that matter, anywhere in Oregon, let alone in different parts of the country, according to our geotechnical engineer. The director has already engaged us in conversations around how we can put additional steps in to ensure that this type of miss doesn't occur in the future.
I just have one last comment. I don't think I'd be doing my job if I didn't say that the citizens of Lapine would obviously like to see something moving forward, and I understand that this wasn't expected, and that we just encourage you to remember that it was put in place because of the safety of our community, and that's why we were doing the project, and so we'd definitely like to see it still be a priority for ODOT.
Thank you, Councillor. We're on the same page there, certainly. Yeah, thank you.
Councillor Martinez?
Wow. Geotechnic. It sounds like Mother Nature is letting us know who's in charge again. Unfortunately, it's a pretty big blow to the community, as it is to the state in whole, to the travelers on 97, you know, with the probably one of the highest crash ratios in the state, is right in this the corridor. You know, it's one of those things that evidently was not anticipated. I think we all have had that happen in our lives, unpredicted situations just slam us down. But I have to agree with my fellow councilor that it is a priority for the community, as I know it is with the state. So I don't want to see, or would not like to see, too much grass grow while we explore other options. I do know that other options were out there 10 years ago when the city was first incorporated, even before the city incorporated. There were other options of rerouting 97, unfortunately, clear outside of the city limits and back around. I was sitting here listening and looking at this slide presentation, you know, maybe we shouldn't look at it as so much as a blow to the community, but maybe as an opportunity. Something that evidently has not happened in Oregon before, we have happening right here. You know, these little molecules or whatever they are just happen to embed themselves right here in Lapine. You know, if we take that opportunity, think about it, you know, Lapine is unique. Unfortunately, this isn't the this we want, but it's here. And there's not a lot we can do about it, except to continue to work for the safety of the citizens and the visitors that travel 97. So I want to thank you for your work, the diligence, and the, you know, really the safety of, you know, what we're all here for, our citizens. So I'll just say darn it.
Thank
that
you,
way
Council.
I don't get in trouble with other language I could use, but thank you.
Thank you,
Councilman.
I sat and listened to all of this, and really it really kind of bothered me about all that has been done, knowing that the community is really looking forward to that overpass. I don't think there's a day goes by that somebody in the community doesn't say, "God, what's going on out there? What's going on? Why aren't they moving forward?" And it at least now we have an answer for them when they ask. As far as the overpass itself, I don't know what the answer is, but I really think right now that we might be better off if we realigned Highway 97, even if it goes outside of the city limits. I know if we did that it would really hurt, and I think the chamber wouldn't be very happy. Most of the businesses in downtown wouldn't be very happy. But we have to realize that we must provide safety, and safety has to take precedence for everything else. All I can say is please move forward as rapidly as you can and come back and give us your solutions for the problem. Thank you for coming up, and thank you for making this presentation, and thank you for explaining to all of these people out here where that project is at.
In Lapine here, we have a student representative. You want to introduce yourself, and do you have any questions for
it? I'm Trenton Tennant. I go to the high school in Virginia. I did just cut soccer practice, so I'm sorry for being late. I went through the packet, and it is upsetting. You know, I wish we could have that overpass work out, but yeah, like Don said, just move as fast as possible and let's get a new solution in place so that we can have the safety for the people. That's
better. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I guess the only thing I have to say, other than what the council says here, is this does affect our economic development in the city of Lapine. There's a lot of stuff planned for that north part, whether it's the Wakey Up Junction or the, you know, Gordy's truck stop. They're very concerned, and with that note, I also talked to, which was happens to be our county commissioner, which is the chair of the transportation, and she's up on board for moving ahead to give these businesses some sort of future. I mean, they can't build motels, they can't build all they want to build up there. They have no clue what's happening to 97. The railroad tracks itself hasn't caused anywhere near the accidents as the turn lanes in the northern part. So I'm sure our commissioner is fully on board with that, and I would hope that your staff for Region 4 would really, really push it, because I think it's on the horizon that could be done. I'm sorry that all this happened, but there can be solutions to it. And that's all, basically all I have to say, and we really, really have to push ahead to get some turn lanes up there. I know Corey's been involved in it a little bit so far, and it's never been brought up before. It's got scores because of the overpass.
Sure.
It's really gone. I mean, we're going to be calling. We're going to be doing everything we possibly can to push that forward, plus the speed limit up there, too. And we'll be getting that paperwork together shortly. Okay. I'm going to let the public ask questions, make comments, but please just be respectful for these two. It is a disturbing thing for everybody here. Anybody have any questions? Ken, would you name and address?
My name is Ken Mullinex. I live at 5236 Glenwood Drive here in the city. And my question is there any opportunity to provide some kind of safety as we build or redo the highway coming from Sun River to 31 next year? Because we're gonna have, it's in the STIP to do that, and that part right along where the railroad, it seems to me there would be opportunity to use some of these funds that were left over to maybe do some turn lanes or improve that whole thing. So the quickest thing could be done would be something at that point in time. Is there?
Well, I think these are the kinds of things that Mayor and members of council were asking about too, and that could be included. This would be, again, a recommendation that we make to the Transportation Commission to repurpose the remaining funds that were allocated to the original project to explore the types of things that you're describing. And it could range all the way from a very long-term realignment of Highway 97 that could get us back to a long-range, the long-range goal of grade separating the bridge from the railroad tracks, I mean the highway from the railroad tracks, to more short-term solutions that could enhance safety just generally in the corridor. Ken is correct that we do have a project that's programmed for repaving this section of Highway 97. And so as part of that project, with support from the director's office and the Transportation Commission, we could look at what other elements could be added to that paving project that could further enhance, improve safety in the corridor and provide some of the things that would have been accomplished if we'd have been able to achieve what we set out to with the long-term solution.
Thank you. Anybody else? This gentleman over here.
Harold Johnson. I use Burgess Road quite a bit. Right now you have a big problem because of the signals at First Street. It's done a positive impact on the city, but what it's also done is stack traffic up at Burgess. So you, instead of getting three or four cars going by, when you get 12, 15 cars going by, along with the southbound traffic. So you need to do something there almost immediately. I don't know whether it's a signal or something to help us get out and get across. Or you talk about safety. That's a prime concern there.
Okay.
And the other thing, has anybody even thought about an underpass? A lot less weight. You don't have the embankments, you don't have, you might have the same amount of, or close to the same amount of structure as far as concrete, but you don't have the weight of the embankment.
Right.
So the
and my last thing was, you talk about a paving plan. How's the paving plan going to help our traffic unless you're adding weight, lanes? And asking these questions from background. I made a living as an electrician working on huge projects, much bigger than this.
Right.
And they built those on the bay, on mud flats. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, to address your question on the underpass, one of the things we skipped over was that groundwater in this area is about 12 feet below grade, below the top of the surface we're walking on. And of course there are things that can be done to mitigate building underpasses with relatively low groundwater tables, but that is certainly an option that would take quite a bit of investigation. The downside to that is that although the weight might be lower, we're still getting the weight closer to the skeletal features that are unpredictable.
I worked on a project that built a highway, a four-lane highway, in tidal water underneath at two big pumping stations. So handling the water is not a problem.
Yeah,
it's a matter of what you want to spend.
I would agree exactly. May not be a problem, but it is a challenge and likely an expensive one. So it does get down to how much you want to spend and what the best use of those funds are as far as looking at all the possible alternatives, from realigning to going under to putting an overpass at some other location where we don't find this subsurface condition. So I think all those could be explored. Again, if we're looking at long-term solutions, we'd want to look at those kinds of alternatives before we recommended anything else, now that we have a better idea of what to expect with the subsurface condition.
Okay.
As far as the paving project goes, it is just a paving project, a pavement preservation project. Wasn't intended to add capacity or even make any particular safety improvements. What we're talking about is, given the change here from having a long-term solution to going back to the drawing board, it does enable us to look at, okay, are there things that we could do as far as channelization goes, as far as intersections like Burgess at US 97, that we could include as part of a pavement preservation project that we haven't done yet. We have not done that work, not anticipating the need to.
Okay. Okay, sir, we gotta move on to other questions. How about the lady in the plant?
Will ODOT replant out in the area that they cleared for this project and re-beautify it?
Yeah, great question. We will take a look at that, certainly. I think the question, the options that we have is to try and reestablish the area in its most natural state before we got here. We worked with BLM on the right-of-way, mostly with the right-of-way that was required for the project, and so working with them on how to manage that it will be important. But the other option for us will be to, again, depending on the level of interest in better understanding what this subsurface condition means, we could talk about utilizing that embankment that's been placed out there to further investigate what the weight of a project like this could mean here at Wickiup Junction. And so those are that's the range of options. I mean, we could go back to taking everything off and making an effort to reestablish it in its natural state, or we could use it sort of as a case study to evaluate under these kinds of conditions how does settlement react to a weight that's placed on the ground like what we've experienced here. So I think we will look at that, work with you as well as the BLM on what that long-term state of this particular area looks like.
Okay. And this gentleman right here?
I'm an ex-railroad man in Union Pacific, and I've talked to Peter about it. When they were testing out there and doing all their checking, did they ever test for the vibrations of the locomotives and the boxcars going through there? We used to have a problem on the Columbia River all the time where the silt would shift. If the locomotive going by it, the ground vibrates.
Yeah, now I don't recall us looking specifically at the impact of the railroad
on
the ground. I could understand that. Yeah, it would be worth us at least talking about what the impact of that could be. What's been interesting is that while we've observed a lot of settlement as a result of the weight of the project that we placed out there in and around the railroad, in monitoring the elevation of the railroad itself, there's been little or no change at all to the elevation and grade of the railroad, which we're thankful for, because we certainly would not have wanted to have those types of impacts as a result of our project. But because of its close proximity to the railroad, it would have been easy for us to at least anticipate some type of impact to our neighbor there, the railroad. It didn't occur. But the vibration is something that we could at least talk about whether that would have an impact.
My name is Pat Stone, and in line with his question on the railroad, I used to know this answer because I've lived here for quite a while. What about realigning the railroad out of town? What does that do? How does that happen?
I'd like to think that anything is possible. But when it comes to realigning railroads and irrigation canals, I have found that out of all the work that we do, that could be some of the most complicated work. Not that it shouldn't be looked at or considered.
A bridge?
Bridging the railroad.
Railroad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Only if they want to. They got a powerful lobby.
Yeah, so I think
okay, that's a gentleman.
I think really it comes back to what we're trying to accomplish and what the best way is to accomplish that and what the cost of those alternatives look like. I mean, realigning the railroad or taking the railroad out of grade from where it is currently would, like realigning Highway 97, be a very expensive endeavor. And we've looked at one option already. We knew what that would have cost to complete. What we're talking about is something that would be exponentially more than that if we're talking about either the railroad or taking US 97 completely around. Not that it can't be done, but it does come down to cost and priorities for those types of investments.
Okay, the gentleman over here, he had his hand up first.
Oh, that was answered by the railroad.
That was answered, okay.
I had a question about the foundation design. Is there any, have you looked at any potential piling reinforcement or drilling piers down through this material to get it friction enough to hold up the, you know, you put a bunch of weight out there is what you did, and put a mat, so to speak. Why was that done if you knew there was a chance of the thing having to be buoyant enough to stay up above the subsurface?
And what was your name, sir?
Dennis Kappa. Kappa. K-A-B-A.
Thanks for the question. The reason that you can't put a deep foundation in, and you know, our external geotechnical experts, we asked them to consider every option possible to give us an opportunity to go forward and finish this project. The reason that you can't put in deep piles to help support the foundations is because by the time you get down 250 feet, there's nothing lateral there to hold it up. There's no friction on the side of those piles, which is how most of the piles develop their capacity. The idea of floating the foundations on this 50-foot layer of silty sand actually adds up, and even with some settlement, typically in other cases like this, when we see excessive settlement, we would build it up even higher, maybe twice as big embankment, let it finish sinking, take that load off, come back, and have a project. The thing that's different here is we have a type of material that compresses and deforms in ways that we can't predict compared to normal soils. So that idea of putting in deep foundations or even doing compaction grouting, there's a lot of different alternatives. We asked our consultant to come to look through in depth, and what they came back to was the recommendation, and any recommendation would be to unload the weight on that top floating layer so that we didn't have to try to predict what these diatoms would do over time.
Okay, gentlemen, in the middle, your name, please.
Gary Black. You know, in the spirit of trying to stay civil, because I'm upset about this, I mean, the $17 million down the tube, it's gone. Never going to get back. Probably going to spend more than that before you're through, because now you have to take down what you built. When the geotechnical surveys were done, it sounds to me like what you're saying is you did the bare minimum. You didn't do any extensive testing. You did whatever the bare minimum was, and then we went on with the project, and now we're going to, taxpayers are going to be up $17 million. Is there going to be any ramifications to this with any of the people that made those decisions, or is this going to be slept under the rug and move on and to heck with the money?
Yeah, I think certainly when we talk about the impact of something like this on public funds, it's not lost on any of us how critical it is that as an agency we look at what the cause was, what the impacts are, whether we were negligent in some way.
I mean, when you operate on the
let me be really clear about that. We weren't negligent. In fact, it wasn't the bare minimum that we conducted as far as our geotechnical engineering. It was the standard of practice, and I think that was substantiated when we brought in Cornforth as our geotechnical engineer to look at this project after the fact. We don't typically, I'm not sure I've ever experienced a project where we've had to use a scanning electron microscope or X-ray diffraction to know what we were dealing with. And our consulting engineer that works all over the world had to utilize those very specific, specialized techniques for understanding what it was that you have underground here at Wickiup Junction. It is an extremely rare situation. So to think that we went the bare minimum, no, we went the standard of practice. And I've been building bridges here in throughout Central Oregon for over 30 years. And utilize similar methods for doing that geo subsurface investigation to know what sort of design to foundation design we needed to use to support a bridge.
Did we do the deep core soil?
We did do some deep drilling, and so we knew we had some weak soils down deep, and that went into the design. If we were just talking about the bridge here, we wouldn't even be here tonight, because the bridge was designed for the type of thing that we determined from our geotechnical analysis. What we didn't anticipate was the weight of, and wouldn't, again, historically, typically, ever, think that the embankment itself, the weight of the embankment, was going to cause this sort of deformation, because we've never built, tried to build that kind of embankment on a bed of saturated diatoms, you know, microscopic skeletons of algae that have been there for tens of thousands of years. Never happened before. And our consultant had the same experience. They drew on their own colleagues to try and get an idea of, you know, what we were experiencing here, right here in Wickiup Junction, Central Oregon, and didn't have anything to draw on. And that's why their recommendation came with a high level of uncertainty, is because there is no this sort of material has not been explored before to know what the properties of them are and how they would react to this kind of work. So I just want to be really clear. We didn't do the bare minimum. We did the type of work that we would always do for projects like this, for the project at Wickiup Junction. If we'd had any idea that we were going to have to pull out a electron microscope and or do x-ray diffraction to figure out how to design to the types of materials that are down deep in the ground here, we would be looking at a different picture today. But there was nothing that would indicate that we were going to experience those conditions here in Central Oregon.
Okay, anybody else got another question? It's also this gentleman right here. Name?
Andrew Smith, 14775 South Sherpine Way. You mentioned here your recommendations got to go before a commission. How soon is this going to happen? Is this going to drag on? Or?
Thank you. No. I'm sorry. Did you have other questions? Or?
No, that was it.
Yeah, so we are preparing to take a recommendation to our Oregon Transportation Commission at their October meeting. So it's the October workshop that we'll be preparing a formal recommendation. We've already provided them a similar briefing as we provided you tonight, so they're aware of the situation, and we've given them a sense of what the recommendations from our geotechnical engineering consultant have provided. And so we'll be taking them that formal recommendation.
They'll make the final decision
in October. Yeah. So back on the funding piece that the previous gentleman mentioned, we had $17 million authorized overall for this project. I'm going to look at you, Della, but I think we had about $10 million, just over $10 million that we had spent on the construction contract itself. And so there's a balance of funds between what had been spent to date, not that it was a small amount, certainly a lot of money, but there is a balance of funds between what had been spent to date and what we had authorized for the project that the transportation could authorize us, again, to repurpose and conduct the types of work that have been asked about tonight, as far as looking at alternatives, looking at other shorter-term safety improvements and those kinds of things. So that will be the type of request that we take to our Transportation Commission at their October meeting.
Okay,
you spent $10 million.
Could you hang on a minute, sir, and just say your name and if you have a question?
Still me, Gary, you still haven't answered that question.
I'm sorry?
What are you going to spend to now tear down what $10 million spent to build up?
Yeah, good question, and we're working with our contractor to answer that question. We're still not sure how much of it we're going to tear down. That gets back to the question, do we want to eliminate or remove all that embankment? Do we want to leave some of it in place so that we can sort of evaluate what the properties of this condition means when they're loaded with that type of weight? So we're still working on those questions, answers to those questions. But if we're talking about the entire project, right down to natural, original ground, we're talking about a couple of million dollars, as I remember, Della. We're estimating the cost to decommission and remove everything out there to be a couple of million dollars. So even with that, if we're in the $13 million range at the end of the day, relative to what was authorized for the project, there'd still be some funding that was allocated to this area, to this solution, to this project, that we could request the Transportation Commission to repurpose. In other words, we won't utilize all of it, thankfully, albeit a very large amount. There will be a balance that we could request and are proposing to request our Transportation Commission to use to reevaluate our situation here.
Okay, this is a work session, and the council has a lot of our stuff to do. If there's another question other than what's being answered, this lady right in the back will take one more.
My name is Martha Bauman. I live at 1705 Deer Run Lane. Mr. Bryant, which I've known for quite a few years, anyway, will that transportation deal be held in Redmond where they used to have them, or is, are you talking about in Salem?
The Transportation Commission meeting in October will be in the Valley. Yeah, it's actually in Silverton. It's their workshop. So in addition to having their formal meeting where we would conduct business like this, they're also having their workshop. The Transportation Commission will have conduct their workshop in October, and they'll do that in Silverton. So it's
then will you get back to us and let us know ASAP or as soon as you can anyway?
Absolutely, yeah. Through
Mr. Mayor, I'd just like to make a statement. I'd like to leave this.
Your name again?
Carol Johnson. I'd like to leave this meeting with some sort of reassurance that you are going to pay attention to doing something with Burgess Road ASAP as soon as possible. That has been greatly impacted.
So I will say this. Because I can't commit the agency to work that's not been authorized by our Transportation Commission. But the proposal that we have drafted to take to the Commission in Silverton in October is general enough to include Wickiup Junction. So it'd be the types of safety improvements that you described, the types of needs that you described earlier, all those things could be captured under the broad umbrella of the proposal that we would be taking to the Transportation Commission next month.
Okay, this is the last one, I'm sorry. Your name again?
Don McAllister. Question on, in the interim, can there be something done to put a stoplight in place on Burgess and 97? It's a very dangerous intersection.
Well, again, I think it would come as part of the answer to the question. We can't do anything so quick that we haven't evaluated what the traffic impacts of a traffic signal would mean on Highway 97 at Burgess Road. We spent a lot of time looking at the one at First Street to figure out, okay, do we really want a signal at First Street? Does Lapine really want a signal at First Street? Because it's going to, you know, it's going to cause some things. It's going to cause some queuing. It's going to cause trucks to back up. It's going to, you know, it creates impacts that we like to evaluate before we just plop one in. And so I think, again, one of the things that we could do as part of, if we get support by the Transportation Commission to look at these types of needs here in Wickiup Junction as an alternative to what we were intending to accomplish, we could do that kind of analysis fairly early on and look at what a traffic signal could mean at Burgess Road.
Kind of a cheap alternative.
Okay, no comments, please. I think we want to thank them for coming to inform us. I mean, this is a hard thing on their organization, too, is they aren't taking it lightly. And Mr. Bryant said over and over again that they're going to look into what they can do in the future. And the city, as far as the councilors, and myself and the city manager will, don't worry, we aren't gonna let this go away quietly. So maybe we can take just a few minutes breaks. I'm sure people just came here for this. If you want to stay for the whole session, you're welcome to. But thank you both for explaining it to us.
Likewise, Mr. Mayor, I just want to thank you and members of council for having us here tonight, and for the public too, for their questions. I know it's been a difficult situation for all of us here at Wickiup Junction. I very much appreciate your time this afternoon.
Thank you very much. Thank you.